Scene 13, Shirley Jennifer, 7:50 p.m. "Don't forget," those had been Giles' last words to me. It was unnecessary advice. I had no intention of forgetting. It didn't occur to me I could possibly forget. Mind you, I knew Giles. In my heart, I was convinced that it didn't matter if I did forget, and that could have played a part in what followed, too. There wasn't a chance in hell, I was certain, that there was anything important about the package. It was all his own compulsive need for super security, like this business of always having two keys to his room. Two keys which he kept, I'm sure, in two different pockets of two different items of clothing. And even if at that moment I had known just what was in the package he wanted me to get, there would still be no way in which I could have considered the mission to be in the least vital. Except, of course, that it was. And it had been a bitter chain of circumstances that had ended by putting the responsibility for it in my hands. The question was, what do I do now? On the one hand, there was no necessity of rushing for the package at once, even if I could conceive it to be a matter of great urgency. The cloakroom would remain open till 11 at least, and at this time of year there were not likely to be long lines, and it was just about 10 to 8. For that matter, Giles would be back in plenty of time to get it himself, even if I didn't budge. But of course he would worry and wouldn't be able to relax for peeking unobtrusively at his watch. For that matter, he would probably remain unrelaxed, wondering if I would forget. The super secure are never secure. But, on the other hand, quite apart from Giles' package, what I really wanted to do, as I had wanted to do on two or three earlier occasions that day, was to cut my losses, call it quits, go home, and forget the convention. I had Giles' ticket and key in my right jacket pocket, so I could get the package, take it to 1511, leave it and the key there, and be home by 8:30 and maybe watch television or do a little hard thinking about my next novel. Earlier, something had always happened to keep me from going home and breaking the chain of circumstances, and it happened now again. To be exact, nothing happened this time. Something was. That something was a matter of stupid pride. I could feel the wall of silence about me. I could feel eyes around me staring at me. I could feel myself the subject of remark, and it all roused the worst in me. I suppose that I, too, have my share of stubbornness. The kids, when I was young, were not going to beat me into abandoning my name, and this bunch of sniggering whisperers were not going to drive me out of the ballroom because they had been titillated by my outburst of temper. Not until I was ready to go. God, I was ready to go right then, but they could never possibly believe that. There had to be some wait. So I walked to the coffee urn as calmly and indifferently as I could, poured myself another cup of coffee, added cream very deliberately, and walked back to the table. Everyone made way for me. No one said a word to me. I sat down. I'd drink the coffee slowly, and then I'd go. I half expected some friend or acquaintance, Asimov perhaps, to join me. "Hi, Darius, what happened back there? Heard you yelling at Giles." No one came. I was truly pariah for a day. I looked about as I drank, trying to make the glance stony and calm. I didn't know anyone near me. They were worthy booksellers and their ladies, I imagine, but I found none attractive. For some reason or other, the women repelled me in particular, at least those I saw. As far as I was concerned, Sarah Vasta Vasta, or whatever her name was, had given the entire sex a bad name. I tried to imagine the bulging pipsqueak in bed and failed completely. She probably arranged every movement in advance and didn't begin until you had recited every projected movement in the correct order. Then if you slipped, it was the knee in the groin and out you went into the hall with your clothes following you in a heap. When I was through with the coffee, when I had drained the last drop and had looked about me just to show everyone I was perfectly at ease, I stood up. With an inner thankfulness so intense I could almost feel my knees buckle under the pressure of it, I began the procedure that would take me home within the half hour. It wasn't to be. The cup of coffee had delayed me a crucial 5 minutes, and just before I reached the head of the escalator I saw Shirley Jennifer. 5 minutes earlier, 2 minutes earlier, and I would have missed her. I hadn't seen her for at least half a year, but that was perfectly normal. We could see each other every day for 2 weeks, and then not again for a year. That was the arrangement between us. It wasn't an affair. We just saw each other now and then, never as a result of planning, and we enjoyed each other's company. And sex was usually part of the enjoyment, though not always, and neither one of us had a hang-up about it. I said, "Shirley," with honest enjoyment, and she said, "Darius," and there we were, hugging happily. She said, "I knew I was coming here for some reason, but I didn't think I would walk right into the arms of the handsomest competitor I have." Some competitor I was. Her books do far better than mine. She writes family epics, traces the generations. I've tried reading them, since I felt that when you know the body of an author really intimately, the least you can do is try to probe her soul, too. Unfortunately, true's true, her books left me cold. They're for women, pre-liberation women, and I'm a man who is rather partial to feminism, actually. Well, maybe that's what made Shirley so pleasant. She had this notion that women's true happiness lay in pleasing a man, and while I'm feminist enough in principle to think this is entirely wrong, why, when it happens, it's hard not to enjoy it. Actually, I've never known anyone to enjoy every part of sex as much as Shirley does. She'll lie on the bed next to you and just manage to touch hips and wriggle and make little orgastic sounds, even when it's all over for a while, and smoke. Well, she has bad points, too. She has to smoke afterward, and that means my undershirts pick up the odor. Maybe if she didn't smoke, I wouldn't ever allow 6 months to go between meetings. "Did you just get here?" I asked. "Just came. I was at my agent's." She had a way of dragging out the final syllable of each sentence and giving it a little singing sound that had me put off when I first met her, but it wasn't affectation. She didn't ever speak any other way, and after a while I found it rather cute. It meant I could recognize her on the phone any time without fail, however long it had been since I had heard her voice, and that pleased her. I could also tell if she were in a room, even if I couldn't see her. I could then walk right to her, and that pleased me. She went on, "And then when I came here, I didn't have any cash, not $17.50 cash, so I signed a personal check, and before they would accept it, I had to fill out a form that asked the details of every fragment of my autobiography." "Have you eaten, Shirley?" "No. Just some drinks and a few pretzels. Is there anything left to eat?" There were still a few people lined up at the buffet tables, so I said there was, and offered to get it for her. She said, "Oh, you wait here. You won't know what I like." I'd be willing to take bets at any odds that I did, but I always believe in letting women have their way in the things that don't count. It gives them a great deal of pleasure and makes them more amenable in the direction of the things that do count. Shirley came back looking good all the way. She was 5'8" tall, and in fact, when I described the kind of girl I liked some time back, I was thinking of Shirley. She's just right, every part of her, even the reddish hair, which I think isn't quite her color, because elsewhere it isn't. She's the kind of girl who... Well, I'll tell you. She's the kind of girl who doesn't use perfume and smells good anyway, except her breath after she smokes. I said, "No pastrami?" I knew she was big on pastrami, and that sometimes affected her breath, too. "Was there pastrami?" Her brown eyes grew big, and for a minute I thought she would allow her lower lip to tremble, but she didn't. She just looked chagrined. "I guess it must all be gone." "Maybe not at the other buffets. Hold on, and I'll be right back." I managed to get some slices of pastrami and a few of corned beef, the last in the room, I think, and came back with them, which made me a hero in direct proportion to her love of the stuff, which was great. "You're a doll, Darius," she said. "If you play with this doll, honey, you know what'll happen. If anyone plays with that doll, honey..." "Not at all," I said, making the ritualistic protest neither believed nor meant to be believed. "No one, Shirley, except you. I padlock my zipper when you're not around."
"And it's not padlocked now?"
"You better believe it isn't." I let her eat undisturbed for a while. One of her good points is that she never bothers to pretend she doesn't enjoy eating, and why should she? It's my feeling that anyone who doesn't enjoy something as intrinsically enjoyable as food isn't going to enjoy any of the other good things of life, like sex. Or else such a person would try to make sex replace food
and then things would get too high-strung for me. I like sex to be relaxed and playful, and I don't want it to be a kind of horizontal fist fight. After a while, I said, "Are you going to be autographing?" "No," she said, "not in any big way. But my paperback people have asked me to stay in their booth for about an hour tomorrow afternoon and sign little cards announcing a boxed set of the Roswell Family series, and so of course I will. And then I thought I would come down tonight and get into the mood, you know. It was a good thing I did, because look what happened. You." "You're not staying at the hotel, are you, Shirley? At these prices, when I have a perfectly good apartment on the river?" "Same place?" "Of course the same place." "Shirley?" We never asked after each other's private lives. What we did, when, and with whom was out of bounds, but you had to make sure you weren't on a collision course. I just had to say, "Shirley," and she knew what I meant, and she could easily say, "Too tired tonight." She might really be, or she might be at the wrong stage of her menstrual cycle, or she might be busy at her writing, or in the idealistic stage of a love affair. Who could tell? Someone might be living with her. But none of these things was true. She smiled her special sunshine smile, the effect on me was sunshine anyhow, and said, "You're welcome at the Jennifer Suite." After a while, she finished eating, and we walked about together, and she introduced me to some friends, and then engaged them in animated conversation while I waited patiently.